We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Good morning, Grinders. Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD. You're going to follow me on Twitter. And it's Monday, March 25th. And are we live? It says scheduled here. I'm not sure if
we're live.
We're live? Okay. Just want to make sure. I don't know. On my end, it says scheduled, and typically it says live. Okay. Now it's okay. StreamYard was screwing up. Okay. Just wanted to make sure I'm not speaking into the void. It's Mondays with McCool, bringing in James McCool, co-author with me on the Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports 15-hour audio DFS masterclass. You can pick up at theoryofdfs.com. James, we're three and a half days away. But before we talk a little bit about baseball, what the hell happened at the NHL Live Final yesterday?
Oh, my God. So, as it turns out, DraftKings made an oopsie. And I don't know how this oopsie happens. But they made an oopsie, and they ran the Live Final on regular software rather than no late swap software. And then... somebody important got scratched. Braden Point got scratched for Tampa
and
Bay.
And Victor Hedman.
Right. But Braden Point was higher owned. He was the highest owned player on the slate, I think. And he got scratched. And then they had to go up. A lady had to go up with a microphone and say, "Don't late swap, or we're going to revert it anyway. But if you late swap, you're going to get in trouble." Because somehow they did not run it on non-late swap software. I don't know how you make that mistake. It's common.
Someone in another Discord said that has happened before.
It has. It's happened, like, I guess, four or five different times, which does not make any sense to me. I do not understand how that issue can come about.
And the reason why they don't do late swap in Live Finals is for collusion purposes.
Well, the reason why they don't do late swap in Live Finals is because they acknowledge that it sucks and they just want to give it to the casuals. I'm kidding.
Okay. That's the real reason. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the real reason. Well, it's a combination of things, right? It's the collusion part, right? You don't want guys equity swapping in the middle of the contests. And then the other part of it is they put together this huge, like, event, right? And late swap is very capacity intensive, and you know, they want people to enjoy themselves too. Whenever I've talked to, you know, John Aguiar about it, and because at the baseball life final, we had to worry about late swap, right? Like we had Tampa Bay, who was, they were all questionable. So we had to worry about that. And I asked him about it, and I understand the collusion part. And then his part of it was that he just wanted people to, they just want people to focus on enjoying themselves and the catering and the drinks and everything like that. And I see both sides of that. So I personally am a fan that there's no late swap. I would much rather just go to a live final and hang out and have everybody on the same playing field. But I also think the late swap sucks. So I understand that I am not in the minor or not in the majority there in terms of pro DFS players.
So what set up the situation? So in the live final, the Tampa Bay game, like, so they basically made the whole day the slate?
Yeah, I think it started at the regular time, I think, 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. Eastern, I think, started.
You sure? I mean, it's a Sunday. I mean, what are the times of these games? I mean, the Lightning played the Ducks in Anaheim, it looks like.
Yeah.
So that was a later game. Just seems kind of weird. I mean, I play NHL mostly on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
Yeah.
And it's I don't want to say it's rare, but it's not often that you're seeing late scratches like to that extent. These were late scratch. These were late scratches.
Yeah. Well, they were questionable before lock, and there were some people that were trying to like be like, oh, well, you know what? Even I'm a casual player, and I still got them out of my lineup. It's like that. There's no late swap. Like, we knew that they were questionable before lock. Sure, there was risk in playing them, but they were by far the best spot on the slate. And then they were scratched at, I think that game started at, what, 7:30? Something like that. It was one of the later games. Usually what they do, and this lock, like, even if they had cut out the first three games, which is typically what they do at live finals, they usually cut off the early games so that you get better info about the later games. Even if they would have cut off the 7 p.m. Eastern games, I still think that scratch would have affected things. I think that scratch came after the 8 p.m. Eastern games locked. So it's one of those things where it sucks the most because it's a live final, but if it were to happen on a regular slate, you would just look at it and just be like, oh, well, this is an NBA slate now. Congrats to the Faders. And then the lineup that won the live final was just disgusting. And you got to think that, you know, they did well, but they also got to pass 30% of the field for free. So it just sucks. It just sucks to see happen, but it is what it is.
I don't know why they do the, seems odd to me why they do the NHL final on a Sunday and not on a Saturday, because there are more games on Saturday and then you don't have to worry as much about like back-to-backs, because Friday typically there's like two or three games. Like the NHL schedule is typically today on a Monday, there'll be like two games. Yep. And then Tuesday, there'll be 13 games. Then yep. Wednesday, there'll be three or four games. Yep. Then Thursday, there'll be 12 games. Then yep. Friday, there'll be like four games. And then Saturday, there'll be 14 games. Yep. And then Sunday, there'll be like seven games. Like, it's like a mix because it's the weekend. But typically, Saturday, you're not dealing with, I mean, there's only going to be maybe two or three teams on a back-to-back that you would even consider that. The thing about the back-to-backs is that if they're on the road trip, they may not have a morning skate. So you may not even get any information like that. The point is that when they're playing every other day, they're going to have practice where you'll learn at noon. I mean, if you come into our NHL Discord here at RotoGrinders, rotogrinders.com/Discord, I mean, Dane posts that all the time. So when you get that information, it's, you pretty much know who's going to play, or you at least have a much better, clearer chance of that. So just kind of weird that the NHL finals aren't on Saturday. Did DraftKings do this combined with the basketball stuff also? That's okay. And but still, even then, would you rather do Saturday basketball also?
Yeah, I would. I 100% would. Because, well, no, it's the basketball one was Saturday and then NHL was Sunday.
Oh, okay. So they, So why not just do it on the same at the same do it at the same time?
Because look, I think so. First off, just because it's a live final does not mean the DraftKings cares about the sport. Yeah, the live final for League of Legends last year was abhorrent. It was a 2-game slate for I think it was LPL. And so like you either had to play a lineup that didn't make any sense and had basically no win equity to be unique, or you had to just like try to chop. I think it was like a 5-way chop or something for first. It's so bad. They don't really care about their sports. And you know that from the soccer ones, right? Like they don't really care that much. They don't put that much effort into it. They put a lot of effort into the NFL one, obviously. They put quite a bit of effort into the NBA one, I think. And really what they did with this one was they planned the NBA one and they were just like, let's just throw NHL on top.
Yeah, but why not do it the same day? What you would think that would be the cheaper way to go. NHL final be on Saturday also.
Yeah, you'd think.
You'd think, but I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. They've been making some really big blunders over the last couple of months as it pertains to the upper echelon of DFS players. Like,
another thing that we have to consider, James, because they've been experimenting on Fridays,
yeah,
having no late swap for NBA, but also what they've been doing is chopping off parts of the slate,
right?
So that late swap isn't as much of an issue. I mean, like one of our regular, you know, listeners, Nerdy Tenor, I mean, a lot of times he says in NBA he only plays the slates where, like, the latest game is 8 o'clock.
Yep.
Like it's 7 and like it's an hour period and that's it. And once that happens, it's fine. But he's not sitting around all day doing swappy swaps. Do you think in MLB this year that DraftKings / FanDuel, because we've seen FanDuel do it also, that we may see main slates that don't contain the West Coast games? That instead of it being a 13-game MLB slate, that it's a 9 or 10-game MLB slate, and the 9 p.m. games are just for just a late slate?
No, I don't think so. I think that they did this specifically because NBA was having issues filling the higher dollar contests. I'm like, they recognized looking at things that NBA was not as popular as it had been in years past. There were multiple times where the flagship contest didn't fill. And their answer to that was, oh, everybody hates late swap. Let's experiment with making that less of a factor when it comes to NBA. You hardly ever see people complain about it with MLB. With MLB, like, yeah, we have to worry about the Dodgers lineups. And the Giants lineups, right? Like Dodgers and Giants lineups are usually, they can be pretty platoon heavy. But for the most part, like, people don't complain about late swap when it comes to MLB.
I mean, it's a pain in the ass, though.
Well, it's a pain in the ass, but people don't complain about it.
Well, the reason why people don't complain about it is because there's not as much, there's really not an edge. It's not NBA late swap is not about, oh my God, my guy is out, I need to swap in someone else. It's more about, oh, three of the top starters for a team is out, and now all these 4K guys are so underpriced that you got to play them or you're dead type of situation. MLB, it really does. You so rarely get that. Dude, even if it's the ace pitcher, and now it's we're having a bullpen game, so the batters on the other side are like $400 or $500 too cheap. Right? Because they're priced for the matchup. Opportunity-wise, you're still just getting 3 to 5 at bats. It's not it's not that huge of a deal. Oh, the guy that was projected to bat 8th is now batting 2nd. So his plate appearance expectation goes up by 3/4. And it's like, yeah, I guess that's a bump, but it's not like I got to jam this guy into like all my lineups type of stuff.
Oh, yeah. You say that about the late swap portion of it, but when it happens before the slate, the dude ends up 37% owned for
right,
no reason.
Of course. the pain in the ass part, James, is that when you build all your lineups at 7 o'clock Eastern, and then the Angels lineup comes out or Dodgers comes out at 7:50 and it's a different catcher. And it's like, I played 100 lineups and I have like 9 lineups with this catcher and I have to go in and swap that guy. Now, I don't mind global swap if possible, but sometimes you have to go in and just like, I got to swap this guy for someone else and this guy for someone else. And then it breaks up your stacks.
Yeah.
From an EV perspective, doesn't change the EV, the lineups all that much, but it's still a pain in the ass.
It's just a different MLB late swap is just a different game. Like at NBA late swap, you're swapping in value. And MLB late swap, I feel like you're swapping in equity. And then I think that that's way different. Like I think that MLB late swap, the way that you should utilize that. I mean, clearly there's the instance where, you know, the catcher is scratched or whatever. You know, you're dealing with either Kyle Higashioka or I don't know, whoever the hell the other backup catcher was for the Yankees, right? Like you're dealing with that. But there's also the instance of, oh, okay, well, you have a late pitcher and you have a stack that's early, and then you can make game theory expectations based off of how well your early stack does. That's how MLB late swap should be used. And that's also in the NBA portion of things, right? Where you're dealing with the new information that you have based on your early starters and seeing how well they do, blah, blah, blah. But you don't have to worry so much about the value proposition of players in MLB. I just don't think that MLB late swap, it just doesn't cause problems. People don't complain about it, and people don't utilize it as much. People don't utilize it near as much as they probably should. Like, people aren't swapping off their stud pitcher late so they can give themselves win equity. People aren't doing that, but they should. I just don't think it's an issue. So Mr. Gerg in the chat did say, I'm curious if DK will start to include these 6:30 Eastern time games on slates because there's a lot of them this year. That is a different part of it, right? I do think that they will be cutting up slates a little bit in terms of the games that start at 6:30, which I personally am kind of.
They have those games anyway? Is there a reason that it seems like that's only been a thing for maybe like last year? Yeah. I mean, occasionally there'd be one, but I mean, I don't remember. No, I started playing MLB DFS in what, 2016, 2017? I don't remember like having four games start, you know, 6:20, 6:25. I mean, Eastern. I mean, is this more of a, I get a sense it's not a TV thing. It's more of a, during the week, they hope that people go to this ballpark after work, directly after work type of thing.
I don't know. I don't try to make logic of the MLB choices. They're not really like a logical league, right? They do a lot of dumb stuff. But it is weird, and I do think that that will have an effect. I don't think the later games will have an effect. I think the earlier games will have an effect. So like in days where we have like 3-4 games locking at 6:30, I could absolutely see that we have two different slates, one starting at 6:30 and one starting at 7, which is stupid. In my opinion, like, yeah, this 30-minute difference, and I think I even tweeted it last year, that it was really, really stupid that that teams or that DraftKings would split these slates up. I think it was, like, shit my money responding to me, and he was just like, well, or maybe it was Greg Ehrenberg. I don't know. It was one of those guys over at Scotastic. They replied, and they were just like, well, they want to make sure that they maximize when people can get off work and, like, make their lineups for the day, right? Because that 6:30 Eastern time lock is that extra 30 minutes where people can build lineups for 7 p.m. Eastern lock, I guess matters a lot to DraftKings, and I'm not one to argue with the data that they have on their users. So maybe that's it, but I could definitely see that we would have slates split up that way. We see them do it with NBA every once in a while, right? Like, we see them split up an hour ahead or 30 minutes ahead of regular lock time. But I don't think that we'll see it for later games. I think we'll see it for earlier games, just not for later games.
Okay, so you think they're going to be, it's going to be very similar to what it's been, where the slate is going to be the 7 p.m. games onward with the late games, as opposed to the opposite, which would be if there's two or three 6:30 games, they do those, and then they cut off the West Coast 9:30 plus games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be more like that. I don't think that we see so much of them cutting things off. I just, you know, DraftKings, like, the changes that they made to NBA, I just think that it mostly came, if they wanted to make those changes and they planned to make those changes, then they would have done it before the season started. But instead, we see it happen in, like, December, like January, right? You see it happen later, which to me signals that they were more trying to solve a problem and band-aid something mid-season that they didn't expect rather than put in something that they would have implemented to all sports. So I don't see it really happening with baseball. And if it does, cool. I don't care. Like if I don't have to deal with the Dodgers every slate, if I don't have to deal with, you know, the Giants and their platoon guys every slate, cool. That's great. I won't mind that. But I don't think that we see it happen very much. And frankly, if it does happen, then, you know, we lose out on that portion of late swap, which kind of sucks for MLB. I'm a hypocrite for saying that, but it's because I like MLB. And I don't like NBA.
Well, I also think for MLB, I have a sneaking suspicion. My prediction is that the sports books are going to be the lines are going to come out later. I don't think I saw it last year compared to the year before on Prize Picks and Underdog that the overnight lines are going to get sparser and sparser. So my it may force me, James, I know this seems like the end of the world. It may force me to actually wake up earlier in the morning.
That's gross.
Because, I mean, before, if you go back a year or two, I got most of my props in overnight. Mm-hmm. 1 a.m, right? Midnight, 1 a.m, before going to sleep. I check the numbers. I check the projections. I bang out everything I can that's available. Not everything's available, but enough is. And then I'll be up in the morning at like 9, 10 o'clock, see what's available. That's maybe 20%. And then I'm pretty much done. I'll go check at 4 or 5 o'clock. Obviously, if news changes, this pitcher is going to be on a pitch count that we didn't know about. You know, things like that. But for the most part, I'm going under the assumption that it may be a little bit flipped. That when I look at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm not going to see as many markets. So it's going to be more about what I get down in the morning.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be, I mean, the difference between the difference between like 9:30, 10 a.m. Eastern and 7:30, 8 a.m. Eastern could be that. I mean, that could easily be 5% ROI differences.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, if not more.
Right.
Well,
it's a matter of getting a strikeout number under 6.5 at -110.
Yep.
And then 2 hours later, it's under six and a half at -145.
Well, no. And you see frequently, I saw it frequently last year, at least on a lot of pitcher strikeout stuff. It was not uncommon to see it move a full point. Like, and if you get 6.5 at 7:30 in the morning, and then it's 5.5 later on in the day, like, you shouldn't even touch it, right? I mean, like, you missed the boat. I think that there will be a really, really large difference in that stuff, unless you're playing on pick six where they don't move lines. So, Godspeed.
When are they going to bring it? Can someone bring pick six? I've been looking into this. There's so many. I mean,
I'm telling you.
Dude,
it is going to be a.
So many mistakes on that.
We're talking like 35% ROI for MLB season. And
that's even with a 20% rake.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. If chat, if you're not already, if you can play pick six and you're not already playing it, you have to go play it. Yeah,
especially if you're on small bank. If you're on small bank rolls, I would think, I would posit, if you're on a small bank roll, and you have all these outlets, right? All these avenues, props, pick 'em, DFS, whatever. If I was on a small bank roll, my first part of my liquidity would be in pick six.
Oh yeah.
Like that would be the price. Like the problem is that if you're trying to get, if you're trying to play $5,000 a day or something, 10,000, you ain't getting that in pick six. But if you want to play 200 or 300, you could get that down on pick six typically. Yeah. So like if that's your bankroll, I mean, I would be going there first and not just doing the sixes. the twos, the threes, the fours, the five, like they're all. I've taken a look. Someone has sent me over because I can't even access this shit.
Yeah.
Someone has sent me over like what the CSVs look like what the data looks like. And just anecdotal comparisons of like, okay, what did everything look like this past day? And what were the lines? And I look and I posit, because someone asked me on my, I think on my YouTube channel, or maybe on this, I don't know. If you should even worry about ownership, like quote ownership in the contest, because they split out your money. So it's like, it's not like one contest. They're splitting out your money in all these dollar contests and all the, everything that they have there. A lot of times, a lot of days, there are like 30 or 40 prop picks that have a 10 to 15 to 20%. Like they're off by that amount. If you're playing the sixes, it's from the looks of it, from what I've seen, if you just essentially jammed your projections, I don't see how you don't make money. Because not enough, like they're just, I looked at what I did for two or three slates for this, because someone sent me the data, is that I took all the lineups that were in a, I just took a small sample, right? Just one contest, whatever. And I said, okay, what were the top 20 like picks of the day? Mm-hmm. Like that was off the most, right? And go, okay, if I consider that to be the, like the valid, any, if you picked anything other than these 20, you suck. Right. Even though like the 21st isn't at that much worse than the 20th. I found that like 90% of lineups like contained at least one that was outside of that set of 20.
Right.
And then I posited to the person that was asking me about pick six. I said, I think you don't have the game theory this at all yet, because I think your win probability, people aren't being duped enough. The best edge picks, the top five, aren't being owned enough that you could just jam in whatever. And then the thing is, for the twos and the threes, that's where the game theory, what ends up happening in the twos and the threes is that one of the top three, like in edges that are the most off from the market, end up being overowned.
Yep.
And then, but the best in the market is not that much is not that much greater than the next 10. So pick two of the next 10. And on the days where the top one fails, like you actually get paid more than if you pick three or four in some of the other contests.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a beautiful thing. And you know, us talking about it, we talked about it last week too, but it'll water down the edge a little bit. But like not near enough to where I think that it would be not worth playing. I think, and on top of that, you know, you talk about the game theory aspect. You can, do you know how many combinations you can make with just the top 10 in edge? Like so many. Yeah. I mean you can.
10 factorial, what, it's 10 factorial over 6 yeah. factorial. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking like hundreds, thousands of options here. Right. Like you have no reason to worry about it. So I think it's awesome. I'm definitely going to play it for MLB this year. I might, Jordan, only play qualifiers in DFS and play pick six for the rest of my action. I might not even do right. Like I might not even play the 250. I won't play the 888. Maybe when the 555 comes through, because usually the 555 is a really nice payout. I might play that, but like for the most part,
the 121 is good.
I like the 121 when it's 15K.
Flat payout. Yeah, the top heavy version of the 121.
Well, no, not necessarily the top heavy one, but when it's a little bit larger, usually the 121 is like 300 people or something. I like
right,
500.
And with 5K to first, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer the 10K to first one rather than 5K to first one, but I play it when it's 10K to first. I play the 888, which is 20K to first most of the time. I love that one. The 250 is always nice, but the 250, like that one will drop down to 5K to first sometimes. So I'm not going to touch that because that's just not with the way that I play. Like I'm not going to being a 250 where I can't, where I can only 50x. So I might just play qualifiers and then just take shots on like the larger tournaments that happen a couple times a year, and then just play pick six with the rest of my action. Cause like, while I love MLB DFS and while I love the concept of it and think that it's just like the best DFS sport by a long shot, I also like to make money, and MLB season is when I make the most of my money. So I should maximize that, and do a lot.
I was going to blame you for that. I mean, I put this all in the same bucket. So like my volume in classic daily fantasy sports over the past 2 years has gone down significantly, not because there's no edge in classic daily fantasy sports. It's that there's edge in bigger edges in other stuff that I prioritize. Yeah. When it was 2017, there wasn't. What am I supposed to do? Now, obviously, classic DFS, the edges have gone down over time. Mm-hmm. That is correct. The games have gotten harder, but they're still beatable. There's still plenty of dumb liquidity in the market. There's still plenty of edges there. It's the difference of, do you want a 4% edge here or do you want a 12% edge there that takes half the time?
It's like, or do you want a 30% edge? Or do you want a 30% edge?
Right.
Sam, I do think, you know, I think that we have seen, it's really interesting. I think that we have seen, I want to say that there was less edge last year for NFL, not this most recent year, but the year before. I think there was less edge the year before than there was this year. I think that the introduction of like contest sims has real, like, I think it has hurt a large portion of the industry. Where, you know, we talked a little bit about the contest sim stuff and what I thought would happen. I made a video on it, and I thought that what would happen is the top maybe 5% of players would get a little better. The top 1% of players would stay where they were, and then the rest of the industry would either stay where they were or get worse. And I think that legitimately the vast majority of casual players have gotten worse because of it. Because they now look at it as like an easy button, right? And that's not what it is. And in NFL, what it led to was these massive overowned players that were just so easy to leverage. All you just had to make one different decision and you could just be the same as the field the rest of the time. And in MLB, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see legitimately like 50% on players, most slates, even on 10 game slates. Because I think that the contest sims are driving people to just play what it spits out and not put enough thought into it. And it's causing a lot of condensation. And I think that contest sims have, while they have made it easier for like the top end players, I think that it has been this kind of false profit thing for casual players. So I do think that while the edge has lessened over like the last 10 years since I've been playing, I think it's interesting to think about the way that people play now and looking for just the answers, where we had this period of like 5 years where people had to get better at DFS and use the tools and use optimizers and use projections and like learn that portion of things. I mean, like 7 years ago, we didn't even have good optimizer solutions, right? And then 5 years ago, now we have optimizer solutions. And then there was this period where people had gotten good with the optimizer solutions. And then that's when the edge got incrementally harder and harder and harder. And then contest sims got entered in. And now I think the people just use the tools wrong at their disposal. I don't have a way to like measure that out, but it's interesting to think about with like that 35% cohort that was already paying our bills, right? Like, I think that they're still there. And then there's another like 15-20% who just don't know how to use the tools that are at their disposal now that have gotten worse because of it.
I disagree with that.
Do you?
I think contest sims have made it very hard for people to build bad lineups. Now, sure. It doesn't mean that they're building good lineups. No, but it does. It prevents you from building bad lineups. And as long as the cohort, like you said, that 35%, that's where the money comes from, right? People that build bad lineups. I mean, the concept and theory of DFS, right, that we've done together, theoryofdfs.com, is that it's a competition for the bad money. right? Yeah. The people, what's a bad lineup in baseball? A lineup that has three guys that aren't even in the lineup and a relief pitcher, right? Like obviously that's an exaggerative example, but that's a bad line. A lineup that projects 70 points lower than another lineup. That's a bad lineup, right? A lineup that is owned at like 0.2%, like something that, like, what are you doing, right? A lineup that has 8 one-off hitters and projects for 30 points lower than any other lineup. I mean, like, stuff like that. That's where the money comes from. Those types of lineups sliding down in scale. So really it's a competition between the people that don't build those bad lineups. How much of the dumb money do they get? The better players get a larger portion of the dumb money.
Right.
But there are a lot of those break even, slightly losing players, right? Maybe you're minus 5% ROI players, minus 10. Like if the rake didn't exist, you'd be profitable, right? So anything that is in that range, let's say you're the type that builds a couple of lineups a day. It's not even one, just a couple of lineups a day. Using contest sims, it'll eliminate mistakes that you may be making on a daily basis where you're building 10 lineups and maybe two or three are just, it's very hard for them to ever be profitable lineups, right? You're playing, I'm going to play a 1% owned stack. And it turns out they come in at 4%.
Right.
Like that stack's awful at 4%, great at 1%, but awful at 4%. That now is a garbage lineup. Now, Sims could have possibly told you that, but you weren't using the Sim. You were just, oh, I think this stack's going to be 1%, and it's a big 4%. Oh, I think this stack is going to be too chalky, so I'm not going to play the Braves. And the Braves come in at 9% owned. And you're like, well, had I known it was 9%, I would have just jammed. The contest Sims are supposed to take care of the question that we get all the time from the theory of DFS. How much projection should you sacrifice for X amount of ownership? That's what the Sims are supposed to, assuming the numbers are accurate, take care of for you. So anything that it spits out, regardless of what diversity, what type of variance do you want, that it should never give you bad lines. You can debate the merits between how good they are, but I think that a lot of break-even players, if they just got rid of the bad lineups over the course of 200 days, they would go from break-even, they would go from minus 5% ROI to plus 2, plus 3% ROI.
Sure. So here's why I think that it's not actually doing that. In theory, contest sims should do that. In theory, right. Contest sims should prevent you from playing bad lineups because they should, in theory, take projections and apply them against ownership and tell you whether something is over or under owned or how much leverage you have.
Or how much correlation do you need in comparison? Right. I mean, all those type of questions.
All these different things, right? It should, in theory. But one, you have to know how to use them correctly. If the data is clean and if the data is correct, you have to use them correctly in order to utilize them in a way that is going to make you a better player. You have to have an understanding.
You don't think that happens? I mean, that happens. And James, it's not in a vacuum, though. I'm talking about you have to judge it in comparison to what the user is doing. I'm not stating that these contest sims, we have sim labs here at RotoGrinders, are like, this is the secret weapon, and you don't have to, you press a button and whatever. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, even if you treated it like that, are the lineups that you're picking out of sim labs better on average than the lineups that you're hand building that you didn't know the balance? And my hypothesis is that you're probably better off looking at contest sims. If you've been playing DFS for a couple of years and you're negative 7% ROI, I would assume that contest sims would be better for you. If you're already profitable, you probably also know how to use the nuances of these tools better, but you may not need it as much. But I'm primarily talking about the losing players that are losing underneath the rake, that this could eliminate a lot of those types of mistakes and get you more break even. But if you're a minus, that's the set it and forget it. That's what's making the games harder. If more of those players, James, if you took a losing player at minus 50% ROI,
yeah,
you said, here's SimLabs. If you're going to play a lineup, just press a button and play a lineup. They go from minus 50% ROI to like minus 5% ROI, like that.
Sure.
Right? Right. So it can't be that bad. Will it turn you into an insanely profitable player by just setting it, forgetting it? Probably not. But it's, to me, designed as a sanity check of like, let me look at the lineups that I put into the contest, and then let me run the sims and go, oh yeah, my lineups are nowhere near like anything close to like, you're probably making a mistake then.
Sure. But here, let me finish why I think that it's not happening in practice. In theory, I agree with you. In theory, if the data is right and accurate, it makes sense that it would make those lineups good enough.
Yeah, but how are people misusing? You're claiming that in theory, it's like, well, what in practice is being done wrong?
The ownership ends up being wrong. And that's what we saw in NFL. I don't know if we'll see it in MLB. But when the ownership on players and stacks and positions ends up being not accurate enough, the gain that you get from utilizing these things is no better than the gain that you get from using an optimizer. In fact, I think that it could be worse.
I would agree with that. Okay, if that's your point, I would agree with that.
That's what I was getting to, and then you interrupted me three times.
That's what I do here. That's how I
interrupt. I know it is. So I think that people look at contest sims as solving the equation for them. And you're right. If somebody who's a negative 50% ROI player ends up using contest sims, they should instantly jump to like a losing player, but not losing their entire ass, right? Like that should 100% happen. That would also 100% happen with an optimizer. Like you take, because a negative 50% ROI player is not using any tools. Maybe they're using projections, but probably not. So these players who are already in negative 5% ROI, I have to assume they're using tools, something, projections, and probably an optimizer. But if they can't even cross over the threshold with an optimizer, which typically will give you the best lineups overall without regards to ownership, then I don't think
those are mean projected lineups.
Sure.
That doesn't make them good necessarily.
No. It doesn't make them good, but it makes them the highest median expectation without regards to ownership. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Contest sims should, in theory, add in the ownership part. But
and the correlation part.
And the correlation part. But the ownership part is the one that I'm focusing on, because correlation you can add into an optimizer. Like very, very easily. Right.
You just in MLB, you're just like, I'm gonna play 5-3 lineups and screw it, and that's super it. Simple. It's very similar, James. I think we agree to some extent that from a heuristic standpoint, if there were no contest sims, I mean, it's the what I would say earlier. If you're new to MLB DFS, instead of figuring out the nuance on a certain slate between different construction types and how much projection, whatever, I said this is what you do. I said you take the top implied total teams. Right, you take the top mean projected pitchers and you click 5-3 and you just let it run and pick whatever lineup you, and those lineups are unlikely to ever be bad.
Right
now we could debate the nuances between what lineup is better, has a higher EV than the other ones, but those lineups that you build as just highly correlated, highly projected, right, with high ceiling teams, with high mean projected pitchers, point per dollar wise, mm-hmm. like you're not going to get into that 30% of bucket of like bad. You're never going to be in the bad line. You're, no matter what the ownership is, I mean, you're probably not going to be in that bucket. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're just learning, like, you could do that in an optimizer. You know, the secret thing is, You could do that in Contest Sims as well. It's just that the optimizer is more like a hard-coded. You have to go in and go, okay, I want 50% of these types of lineups, and put like you have to look and go, what's a good lineup, what's a bad lineup, which one is better than others, and if all those factors are actually accurate, like you could just use Contest Sims and not even need an optimizer to you kind of kind of hack it together. But a lot of the stuff that I used to do in DFS, I still do to some extent, is hacking all of those, how to put the levers together using an optimizer, which is just the knapsack problem solver. And how does it generate? Well, I don't want to have a lineup that's more owned than this. I don't want to have a lineup. These are all blunt methodologies. Contest Sims are more precise methodologies, but it's also a lot of a black box that if the Contest Sims say that, oh, look, I'm getting a lot of Brave stacks coming up. It's like, well, it's assuming that the Braves are only going to be 14% owned as a stack. And then you open up your contest when it locks at 7:10 Eastern and Ronald Acuna is 38% owned as a one-off. And Matt Olson is 24% owned. It's like, yeah, these lineups project really well, but they're way over-owned.
Yeah.
And had those actual numbers be put into the Sims, it wouldn't have given you anywhere close to as much Braves. Like, that's the point that you're making. Yes. But I still think if you did play that over-owned Braves lineup, that's still less of a mistake than playing some 2-2-1-1-1-1, 45-point lower projected line. Like, those are automatically bad lineups. This one is just, it's under-leveraged. So, like, you're going to cash a lot more often, but not win first enough on your own for it to be worth it to play. Yep. But you lose much less in that scenario than playing a lineup that doesn't come in first and doesn't cash that off.
Yeah, so the main point here is, like, those 35% of people that are just really bad at this game, like, I'm not even considering those people when I'm talking about contest sims. I'm talking about the break-even players that pony up for them and the really good players. And I think that the break-even players, they would be just as fine, maybe better off using an optimizer, because an optimizer is going to give them that Brave stack. And there's a chance, based on the logic, that contest sims are going to say the Braves are over-owned at 14% owned. And then people who are using contest sims don't end up getting them. And then they come in at 9% owned, and now they're under-owned when they could have just used an optimizer.
You have to do that judgment for yourself. Difference other than you have to do that manually.
Sure. And you have to think about that manually. But what I am saying is that the people who are not making those thoughts, the set it and forget it group that you have mentioned before.
Okay, so they're not even considering that. That's the problem.
They're not even thinking about it. And so you have to rely on...
So, James, what you're saying is that a lot of people are coming to Sim Labs here at RotoGrinders going, Sim Lab says yes, me play lineup, caveman kind of, me press button, me play lineup, me not win money. What's the problem? Like that.
Well, and maybe they cash a decent amount, but like they don't have win equity. And that's, that's the other part of this is Sim Labs, like you said, has made it so it's really hard to play a bad lineup. But with the way that contests are structured in DFS now and becoming more top heavy, they also don't have much win equity. So like, I think that contest sims are, just going to cross-pollinate here a little bit. Contest sims are a lot like the AI movement right now, in my eyes, where the creation of it maintains so much of the bias of the creator that you have to rely on and trust the creator of the technology that you're using to make the decisions for you. And you have to assume that that technology is going to take into account the things that you care about as a player as well. You can blindly
You're saying, James, that if I made my own AI bot, if I made my own chat Blender HD, that you say that most of my responses would be look at the projections.
Probably, yeah.
Right? It would be like play whoever you want.
Yeah. So those biases are withheld. The RotoGrinders Sim Labs utilizes the logic and the biases of the creators of the people at RotoGrinders. It's very good. I really like the Sim Labs project. I have used it for NBA, I've used it for NFL. the sim labs or the contest sims for SaberSim and for Squirtastic and for all of the other companies, they all maintain the different biases of the creators of those products. So what we end up seeing, I think, is people assuming that these are really, really smart and can do all of the work for you. And these set it and forget it people are then running into this issue of blindly following something that is really complex and usually still utilizes these nuances. I mean, even if you use, go over to ChatGPT and just type something, type in a question, right? And if you type in a question that is very basic, you won't get a good answer. You have to understand how to ask it questions. It's the same thing with contest sims. You have to understand how to maximize the way that you're using them, especially in the current DFS landscape. So I think that, to get back to my original point, I think that that middle group, the people who are kind of like that really close to break even, like if those people are not break even or better players using an optimizer, I do not think that the contest sims are going to make them better. I think that they still have to have an understanding and understand the nuance and how to use these tools in the same way they needed to do it with an optimizer that they never got around to being good enough to be profitable with. So you have to learn these things. And I think there's still a really large portion, you know, 10, 15, 20% of the field that is just not willing to put in the work to learn these things and think they're just easy buttons. And I think that it overall, from what we have seen in NFL and NBA, I think that overall will hurt a lot of players if you do not learn them. So I think that you and I agree to a certain extent. I'm a little bit more extreme towards the other side. You're a little bit more extreme towards the side that is helping people. But I think that the book is still out on whether contest sims are going to be helping that middle cohort of players.
Well, our book is out. Our audio course, Theory of Daily Fantasy Sports. If you want to learn those concepts, it's in this course as well as the Advanced Players Guide. I know plenty of people that still use, even with contest sims, still use our Excel tools. I mean, I still do. I mean, I do. Like to me, the portfolio trimmer is my most used tool in any sport because it weeds out basically like an NHL. A lot of time, MMA, I use the Duke Predictor in MMA. I use Lineup HQ and I build tons of lineup. Like it maxes out at 300, but like this past MMA slate, since there were so many combinations, this past MMA slate was not a common slate where like almost all the fights were pick'ems.
Yeah.
So like lineups that had left 2K on the table were still good, right? Like all these types of lineups. So I built 1,200 lineups, but I only played 100. But I built 1,200 of them and then determined what I wanted to do from there. And then like, okay, well, I could weed out these 400 like right away. Just like, okay, these are too high owned. These are too low projected. These are too, and then I get down to like, and now what do I want to do from a diversity standpoint? How much of this person, how much of that person? I use that in the Excel tools. And I do that in NHL as well. I'll play, James, a lot of times I play 5 to 7 lineups in NHL.
Yeah.
Because I play the mid-stakes contests typically. I'll build 300 lineups. Mm-hmm. I want to see different stack combinations, different teams, different, but, you know, weave them together, different goalkeepers. Then I'll go, okay, I can do this manually in Lineup HQ, but I can just export this into the portfolio trimmer that we have as part of the Theory of DFS for Advanced Players. And it gets my 300 lineups. Depending on the variables that I put in, it gets me down to like 28 lineups.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, now I can manually pick out of these 28 lineups. That it saves me to do that manually, which costs me 10 to 15 minutes. With this, it takes me 60 seconds, 45 seconds, something like that. So with baseball season coming up, if I'm going to be playing 20 lineups, I may be building 600, 900, 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, okay, well, it made all these lineups. Let me get rid of the bottom half.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what am I supposed to do? Click through? I mean, you could only get up to 300 in Lineup HQ. No, I just throw them into the portfolio trimmer and say, yeah, I don't want a lineup that's projected anything lower than this. Okay, gone. I don't want any lineup that is owned more than less than that. Okay, gone. I don't want any line. I want to get rid of all the low-owned lineups that have this guy in it. Okay, gone. I want to get rid of the smart trim, the comparing the ownership to the – okay, I want to get – and now I'm down to – you know, I'm selecting 20 lineups out of 55.
Yeah.
It's like, okay. And they just go, okay, what do I want? I may have a lot of a certain person, but it's like, okay, what lineups don't have that guy in it? And I just go through there, and I clip them out in Excel, put them right into the DraftKings entry CSV. Mm-hmm. Good to go. Enter, upload, I'm done.
Easy peasy. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah, I use it too.
Theoryofdfs.com. Go pick it up. James, you going to have baseball projections up on Thursday?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm stoked. Baseball projections up over at paterdfs.com. I think that baseball season is the best season. I always say it. It's the best DFS sport by far. We get to stop playing NBA, which is just the worst. And we get to get into make some real money on props too, because baseball season is good for prop season too. So if you're into any of that kind of stuff, go check out paterdfs.com, and you can find me on Twitter at @patered_dfs.
You can find me on Twitter at @blenderhd. Hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. Give me those tummy thumbs. Hit the subscribe button if you're new here. Hit the notification bell to know when we go live. We got Grinders Live later today. We got Crunch Time. Tomorrow we got NHL on the show. Remember, we'll be switching over to a lot more baseball starting on Thursday. So maybe like half NHL, half MLB, some NBA. It's basically on this show, I talk about anything you're thinking about in daily fantasy props and pick 'em. That's going on Roto Grinders today.